that faint odor in the air for the book business is the scent of consolidation. This week, that wind blew in for Perseus Books Group and then blew out as Hachette Livre. Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. In recent weeks, Hachette has appeared regularly in trade news headlines, mostly for its spat with Amazon. But on Tuesday, the owner of Little Brown, Grand Central, and numerous other U.S. imprints made news with its complex acquisition of Perseus. For analysis of the deal's implications, we turn to Andrew Albanese, senior writer at Publishers Weekly and our regular Friday guest here in Beyond the Book. And Andrew, welcome back.
Greetings, Chris.
Well, greetings indeed. And, you know, we were talking about Hachette the last few weeks, and I don't think either one of us anticipated we would be talking about them in this way. It's a week of big news for them, beginning with that consolidation and their purchase of Perseus. Tell us about it.
That's right. The big news this week, indeed, is that the Perseus Books Group, which was founded by the late Frank Pearl in 1996, is being sold to Hachette. And, you know, while anything with the word Hachette makes the headlines these days, I think the most interesting part of this deal actually involves the distributor Ingram. Now, under the terms of the deal, Hachette is going to keep Perseus' publishing assets, but it's going to sell their distribution business to Ingram. And the net result is that Ingram, which is already, I believe, the country's largest distributor, is going to add some 400 clients and become the country's largest distributor by a mile. So for Hachette, you know, by spinning off the distribution deal, they are able to somewhat finance their U.S. expansion, which is going to include Perseus imprints like Avalon Books, Basic Books, DeCapo, The Economist, Public Affairs, Nation Books, Running Press, Weinstein Books, and Westview, among others. The addition will bring them annual sales probably around $100 million, is going to boost their annual revenue to over $700 million, which still makes it, I think, the smallest of the big five publishers. But as we've reported for months here in PW, growth is really part of the French media conglomerate strategy. And this really helps them do that, especially on the nonfiction side. So I don't know, Chris, you're a Francophile. Is there a word in France for supersizing your program?
Well, on effet, on peut commander quelque chose géant, okay? Something big, something giant. So I suppose je dois continuer en français. Alors, qu'est-ce qu'on va voir en l'avenir? So what's next exactly?
Well, the deal still has to be approved by regulators, and that's not likely to be an issue at all. But of course, Hachette is also embroiled in this little battle with Amazon over terms. Perhaps you've heard of this. And Hachette also was in the headlines for laying off a bunch of employees in New York City recently. So, you know, those things all appear to be unrelated to this deal. This appears to be more related to Hachette's desire to grow bigger in the U.S. market. But, you know, as we've been saying for weeks and weeks, consolidation is in the air. And when one company makes a move, other companies surely follow. And with Amazon staking out a hardball position in its negotiations, I think the benefits of getting bigger really can't be downplayed. And you really don't need a crystal ball to predict that we're probably going to see more consolidation in this business. But nevertheless, watch this space because, like I said, there's probably more to come and we'll be following it all very closely on the PW website as well.
Yeah, indeed. I think that's a pretty safe bet. And the point you make about Amazon and you know, the benefits of being big, that's a terrific point. And I think we're going to see the implications in the future. But speaking of size and consolidation, in Monday's issue for Publishers Weekly, you unveil your annual list of the world's biggest publishers.
That's right. And our list this year shows a little consolidation of its own. It used to be the Global 60, and this year it is, I think, going to be the Global 56. So the list lost a few entries. But I'll tell you right now, that is due largely to currency fluctuations, which have dropped a few of our previous entries in the Global 60 below the 150 million euro threshold that it takes to make the list. So you can check out the entire list in Monday's issue. It's always an enlightening look at sort of the major leagues of publishing. And I'll share a few tidbits here. The top five largest publishers in the world are unchanged. Pearson still leads once again. And on the trade side, as one might expect, Random House has sort of widened its lead as the world's largest trade publisher. And that lead is going to widen even more in the coming months, especially with the integration of its recent acquisitions like Santillana. And I think that's going to be completed later this year. So more consolidation consolidation in the list this year.
Indeed, it's been a big news this week all across the board. And on the book-selling side of things, Barnes & Noble made its own headlines, and they're going to be making some changes in their company structure.
Once again, a story we'll be keeping a close eye on here. But yes, at long last, Barnes & Noble this week announced that they're going to separate into two public companies, one holding the retail trade stores and the other holding its Nook operations plus the college bookstores. Now, the hope is to complete this by the first quarter of 2015, but we have to say that might not happen. The Nook Media part of the equation has continued to struggle. There have been lower sales of both hardware and digital content, and that's hardly a recipe to sort of woo investors. So, you know, we'll see what happens with that. But, you know, indeed, the announcement of the potential split came as Barnes & Noble announced its full year results, which ended May 3rd. And the bottom line is that total sales for the year fell about 6.7% to $6.38 billion. And while B&N has substantially reduced the losses in its Nook division, sales also dropped by a pretty hefty 35%. I think sales total around $506 million on the Nook side. Meanwhile, the retail trade business, which also includes BarnesandNoble.com, finished the year with a 6% sales dip. So officials at Barnes & Noble stress that the company is on the right path, but those numbers, at least at first glance, are, you know, not exactly healthy.
Well, I'm glad I'm not the physician reporting that to the folks at BNN, because those, as you say, do not look entirely strong. In fact, just a bit poorly. Now, finally, you're in Las Vegas this week for the American Library Association annual conference, and how's your luck holding out?
So far, so good. In Monday's issue and on the PW website, you can check out my reports. But yes, I'm in Vegas. It's in Las Vegas for the first time. The ALA meeting is in Las Vegas here for the first time since 1973, which raises the question for me, what happened in 1973 that kept ALA away for 41 years? I'll see if I can find a little insight to that later this weekend. But all in all, it's a vibrant gathering as always here. And, you know, as discussed last week, there's a real sense of libraries sort of making their own luck going forward. And on the ebook side, that's especially true. After years of slow progress, all the majors are now in. And we heard some good news this week about Simon & Schuster, who is going to be expanding their ebook pilot to all libraries, not just the 20 libraries that were in the pilot program. But I think the big question for libraries, as we talked a little bit about last week, is how they're going to keep readers happy. And anyone who's tried to borrow an ebook will tell you it ain't exactly easy. And the Amazons and the Netflix of the worlds, meanwhile, are redefining user expectations, because those services are really easy to use and they have a lot of content. And, you know, people are used to being able to click on things and not being directed into a hold queue, or, you know, just being able to click once or twice and being directed to the content that they want. So, you know, how slow libraries can be, how much friction they can have in the ebook lending transaction without, you know, starting to really upset their users and losing them completely, it's something I think we're going to be talking about a lot this weekend. There are no answers yet, but there are quite a few companies and quite a few librarians who are here in Las Vegas that are willing to gamble on a new path for ebooks. And I'll report on them all, and you can read about them on the Publishers Weekly site and in the magazine next week.
Well, we'll look forward to that. And Andrew, as always, thanks for joining us. Andrew Albanese, senior writer at Publishers Weekly. And enjoy yourself in Las Vegas, and don't do anything I wouldn't do.
Thanks, Chris.
All right. Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as now images, movies, and television shows. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at the Copyright Clearance Center website, copyright.com. Just click on Beyond the Book. Our engineer and co-producer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.